If the clerk will please announce counsel who will be representing the parties in Texas versus Davidson.
Ma'am, please report. Mr. Edward Blue Allen for Audit Public State. Mr. Mark Stark for Audit Public Health.
All right, thank you. If you're ready to begin, we'll proceed, Mr. Llewellyn.
Thank you. May it please the court. It's good to see you all again. I'm in the unusual position of being the appellant in this court this time. And what we're here for is an interlocutory appeal from a pretrial suppression ruling in a DWI case. The basic ultimate question is whether or not our warrantless seizure of a sample of the appellee's blood was reasonable under the Fourth Amendment or not. I present two issues before the court to claim that it was a reasonable warrantless seizure. One is whether exigent circumstances were present, and two, whether or not there was consent appropriate under the consent exception to the warrant requirement. There was no warrant. This was an overnight DWI stop, nothing unusual as far as the facts go. But we're here in a pretrial setting because the trial court didn't buy our argument and went ahead and suppressed the blood test results. And I'm only talking about the blood test results. There were two actual motions to suppress. We prevailed on the generic one about reasonableness of the stop. We're just here about the suppressed blood test results. And obviously, I think in a DWI case, any prosecutor would say that that's kind of an important piece of evidence. So that's why we went ahead and invoked our appellate jurisdiction here, our appellate rights, to come argue before you today. I think the simplest, straightforward way for the court to resolve this appeal is under the first issue. Garden variety exigent circumstances analysis. Is there some fact or facts present that would excuse the officers from going to go get a warrant because he didn't have the time or the ability, something impeded his ability to go get a warrant before he took the appellee to the hospital to get a blood draw? And the court in McNeely, that's what the appellee stood on in the suppression hearing, basically observes, hey, we don't have a record, we don't have the argument before the court of whether or not exigent circumstances are present in their case. But there are a couple major factors that we can foresee that would give an officer exigent circumstances. One, is there a process or procedure in place that would allow officers to quickly get blood warrants? Does the county or the jurisdiction have a system or
but
process
you know,
set up?
You know that the problem with your argument is that it encourages counties to not have a process or procedure because then they don't need a warrant.
Well, I can see that argument, but I also think it cuts both ways. The other way is that because of McNeely, and obviously with the umpteen PDRs that are pending in front of the Court of Criminal Appeals right now, I think a smart jurisdiction, like we did some 6 weeks after McNeely, is to actually go ahead and get such a system set up. Several of the counties in the cases that have been quoted or put in the brief have such of those systems. We have one now. It's just 6 days after McNeely when this arrest occurred. We didn't have that. But yes, I can see the argument being made. I would never make it, but I can see an argument being made that, well, Second Court of Appeals basically said we don't need to have a warrant process set up. We don't have to bother judges, put them on call 24/7, because we don't need one. As long as you don't have a system, then you're okay.
The lack of a procedure creates exigent circumstances.
True.
So why would you ever need a procedure? That's what you're asking us to hold.
Well, I respectfully disagree with that characterization of my argument. I believe what
I
we're
thought
doing.
You might.
No, I completely understand. That's why I could be flippant and say y'all get the big bucks. You have to consider the public policy here. I'm talking about black letter. Are there exigent circumstances? Supreme Court said they were just thinking out loud, are there facts that would present an exigent circumstance? Well, does your jurisdiction have that? I think if any general reading or just a quick read of McNeely would understand that, okay, state, you law enforcement folks had better get you a system because of the 47 years of advance and the technology, and you can have fax machines like we have in our judges' homes. You can set up a system. You can have a judge down at the jail. You can have a phlebotomist at your jail. You can set up a system. It doesn't put an a burdensome administrative burden on the state to develop one of these systems. You better do it because, again, as McNeely emphasized, if there aren't any facts that would significantly delay the grabbing of a blood sample to the point where it's no longer probative evidence in a DWI case, then the state has to go get a warrant. I mean, that's what they said. That's been Fourth Amendment law forever. Exigent circumstances doesn't apply unless the system breaks down. So that's, in that sense, I would disagree with your characterization of my argument or the import of a holding that exigent circumstances are present. To be honest with the court, I don't see how what set of facts you could have that would not constitute exigent circumstances but for this one. except for this. I mean, what would constitute exigent circumstances? Every judge in the county being on a convention? I mean, something along those lines. I can see, theoretically, a breakdown of the particular system. You have two on-call judges, and neither judge picks up the phone. What's an officer to do? Something along those lines. But here, the officer had never obtained a search warrant. There was no particular system in place, not because it was the officer or the department's fault. We just didn't have one. I guess in that sense, we as the DA's office let them down, because when McNeely came down, we jumped in, we trained all officers, we created a system, we went and begged to the judges, we have a system in place. And then two is whether or not there was an available magistrate. That's the second McNeely category or factor to be considered. The officer had no clue. He had no contact information for any of the four judges, and only four judges in our county that are authorized to issue an evidentiary search warrant. And they did not, and he had no contact information for anyone in the DA's office. He was basically alone, only officer in his city at the time, late at night, and had nobody he could call. And I think all of those factors support my claim that there was a practical impossibility for this officer to even obtain a warrant. But because he'd received a dispatch from law or from the county that said that this man had three prior DWI convictions, he now knows that he was required under the transportation code, the implied consent law, the mandatory blood draw law, he had to go get a warrant or get a sample. So he went and got a sample, and that's why we're here today. But I submit to the court, without having to get into all of those other issues with regard to the second point, with regard to whether or not this is constitutional, which, by the way, is not an issue before the court. It wasn't even litigated. This was just a simple, we say it was a reasonable warrantless search. Appellee said it was not. We threw it up to the court, presented our evidence, litigated the exceptions, and he went appellee's way. So in that sense, I think that...
But don't you have the burden to prove consent?
Yes. Okay.
How would appellee have the burden to preserve that? I mean, it's an exception to the warrant requirement that the state bears the burden of proof upon.
Correct. I apparently misspoke, and I didn't mean to create confusion. We were just litigating this in the traditional Fourth Amendment sense. Yes, because this is warrantless, I have the burden as the state to prove that some warrant exception applies, or this is an unreasonable seizure and the evidence obtained thereby should be thrown out, which was what happened. So no, I did not mean to say that it was appellee's fault. I'm just saying that this is not a situation where the appellee came in at pretrial suppression and launched a full-scale facial unconstitutionality attack against this statute. He didn't raise constitutionality. We didn't litigate that. He didn't raise a facial or as-applied constitutional attack. So that's why I was saying, or what I meant to say, was that there's not the constitutionality of the implied consent law before the court. It's basically whether or not this particular seizure was reasonable or not.
And now, can you tell me about the facts, too, as they relate to this stop and investigation? Wasn't there some passage of time in actually doing the field sobriety tests? And then I think the brief said that he had to be driven to Azle. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor. I don't know if you're familiar with Reno. Reno is the little jurisdiction, the municipality just west of Azle on 199. It was literally not even a 10-minute drive from the stop in the city of Reno to Harris Northwest in the city of Azle. There was an hour and 45-minute delay from stop to actual taking of the blood sample, but during that time, you have a sole officer having to wait for the record to appear to impound the appellee's vehicle. You have the actual stop investigation for the DWI. He then, because his department was so small, does not even have a blood draw kit, so he had to get a hold of an ASL officer to actually agree to meet him at the hospital with a law enforcement blood draw kit to then go ahead and take appellee's sample. So, and I'm not contending that those factors alone, it's just because the Supreme Court tells us, just like they've done forever, you have to look at the totality of the circumstances. Those are relevant factors to consider. There was already an hour and 45 minutes.
So the officers have to actually take the blood draw kit to the appropriate medical facility.
Yes, it has
it's
to be
not
a DPS
certified. That's already there.
That's correct, Your Honor. It has to be a DPS certified blood draw kit.
Okay.
And they didn't have one. Why, I can't explain that. But the officer basically was on the phone with the wrecker, on the phone or on the radio with dispatch, and then on the phone with an officer of the Azle PD, since they're right next door. Hey, does anybody have a kit? Can you meet me at Harrison Northwest? I need to go get a sample. So that's what happened here, and that was the reason for the delay and even getting him to the hospital. There wasn't an accident. There wasn't like some other reason that the officer did himself to create this long delay. That's just how that shook out. Now, with regard to the second point of error, if there aren't any questions, I just think that the exigent circumstances are very clear here, and that under this fact, and that the fact it won't happen again because we do have a system in place, and all of the other cases that have said there wasn't post-McNeely a warrant system in place, or there wasn't exigent circumstances because of the counties having a warrant system in place, that this won't be repeated. But because we're 6 days after McNeely, my officer's stuck out there by himself with no means or capacity to obtain a search warrant at all. So I think this is on the extreme end of what the Supreme Court was talking about in McNeely, as warrant, you know, there is no available magistrate, there's no way to contact the magistrate if necessary, and
he could have obtained a warrant. He could have, he just didn't know how.
Yes and no. At the time, he had no practical, from a logistic standpoint, he had no personal capacity to contact anyone to obtain a warrant that could help him obtain a warrant. And two, he could have done something. He could have sat down and wrote out an affidavit, I suppose. But he had no one that he could call. He testified to that, and I'm just saying the evidence before the court shows that.
But it was still the judges who could issue warrants, who are able to issue warrants now, were still able to issue warrants then.
That is true, but he had no means whereby to contact those. He couldn't call a prosecutor.
That's what I'm saying. He just didn't know how.
That's exactly
it. Could have happened. He just didn't know how.
That could be, yes. But I also think that even if he knew how, okay, if he knew how, there was no evidence before the trial court that a magistrate was available. I know it's a fine distinction, but yes, the officer had no experience, had no means, didn't know how to go about doing it, even if he knew how, because he didn't have any contact information. But yes, those judges were on call. It's just he didn't know who to contact to find a judge at 1 o'clock in the morning. So that was what I submit that all of those facts show that there's exigent circumstances present here.
Isn't that shifting the burden to the defendant to say that there was no evidence, that there was a magistrate available to do it? I mean, it's your burden to prove that it was reasonable not to do it. And while it might have been reasonable pre-McNeely not to have a procedure in place to take a blood draw for someone who has two priors, there are other instances of DWI where there's not implied, there's not that same mandatory blood draw where you'd have to get a warrant. You didn't have a procedure for that. I mean, you see my quandary here is,
yes,
how is that reasonable not to have a procedure, to have an officer out there with no information about how to get a warrant?
I understand, Your Honor. I didn't mean to confuse the court if I did. I was just merely commenting or trying to make the point that based on the objective analysis of the totality of these circumstances, I have an officer who doesn't know how to do it. I have a county that has no warrant system, a PD that has no warrant system in place. So is that our fault? There is, and there are cases that we've mentioned, I've talked about a little bit briefly in my brief, with regard to an argument about whether or not the officer created the delay that caused the exigency, that then he's now trying to come in, basically coming in chancery with unclean hands. He caused the delay. He caused the exigent circumstances. Therefore, we're not going to allow that exception to apply. And the one court that I've mentioned in my court in my brief examined that argument and says that, no, the trial court could have reasonably felt that under those facts that the trial court believed that were correct, that the officer didn't create the exigency. Single trooper, middle of the night accident, two deaths. It was 6 hours delayed before he got to the hospital to get the blood draw. And so here, I don't think that the officer did anything like take a coffee break, unreasonably drag his feet. The only evidence before the trial court was that all of those facts that he found then to be true, the trial judge, and then found to the contrary. I submit that all that evidence and all of his findings of fact point to the exact opposite, that there were exigent circumstances, therefore this was a reasonable warrantless search, and therefore he should have denied that motion to suppress as well. I can stand on my brief with regard to the second point of error since I'm about out of time, but any more questions at this point? I can reserve the balance of my time. Okay, so basically I'll stand on my brief with regard to the implied consent, but again, I think the exigent circumstances issue is dispositive here. All the factors are present, the facts are present, and again, there is a system in place now at this point, so I'll leave all that to the court's determination. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Llewellyn. Mr. Scott.
Thank you for having me here today and allowing us the opportunity to respond to the state's appeal of this motion to suppress. There's two points in this. I do want to address the second point that the state brought up in regards to the implied consent law. I think the Supreme Court addressed that right on point in regards to this case as well when they handed down McNeely, when Sotomayor put in her majority decision that the per se statutes aren't necessarily unconstitutional, but that they don't create that automatic exception to the warrantless search that the state would be looking for here. I think it's very dispositive in there that they want you to focus on the totality of the circumstances, and it kind of kicks it back from the per se part of 724 to the exigent circumstances. So I would agree with the appellant in this in that the dispositive point in here is going to be the exigent circumstances. So I want to move on to that, and I think, you know, obviously with what we're dealing with here is you can't create an exigent circumstance and then punish a defendant based upon the circumstances that you created. And while I understand this, what the state is attempting to argue here, I think it brings up far more problems that would potentially come down the road if you were to allow them, just as the court briefly asked the appellant in this. I mean, essentially, in order for you to find that this was an exigent circumstance, you're essentially going to have to create a convenience exception to the Fourth Amendment and basically say that it was too inconvenient for the state to go out and get this search warrant when case after case, especially in the past 6 months, has come down to hold that, you know, even though 724.012 says that, you know, they have to get that blood draw, that doesn't excuse them from getting the warrant. It just says that you have to go get that. I think a lot of the exigent circumstances that you see in all the cases that have been cited, the exigent circumstances aren't that the officer didn't have a phone number. It's that there was an accident or somebody was injured on the side of the road or that somebody was being taken to a hospital. These are exigent circumstances that an officer might feel that immediate need, that immediate necessity to go around somebody's Fourth Amendment right to take that blood draw. I think, you know, again, and not to get down on Reno PD, but I think, you know, it's unfair to the citizens of Parker County to say that because you've got an officer that has never drawn up a search warrant and doesn't have the phone number to somebody in the district attorney's office, that we're going to violate that defendant's constitutional rights. I think, you know, especially in this case, this officer went to Azle. They went and he talked with an Azle officer, and obviously, as you know, Azle straddles the Tarrant County Parker County line. How hard would it have been for him to say, okay, we've got this third or more DWI, I need to get a warrant? What's the process? I mean, none of that was fleshed out in the original hearing, so I don't think that you've got enough to be able to extend, you know, this far latitude to the state in regards to these exigent circumstances. I think, you know, obviously the fact that there's no procedures in place, and while that has been cited in some of the cases that were put into the briefs, I don't think that's what they're talking about in regards to this. I mean, you've got essentially what they put on testimony, an untrained officer. You would assume that having been in Parker County for a number of years that he would have had some access to Weatherford PD or the Sheriff's Department to get some additional information. Obviously, he was able to find a phone number to Azle PD to get the blood draw kit that he didn't have the availability to. So, you know, again, I'm going to rely on the fact that after this, they changed the procedure. That should be in and of itself enough for you to know that Parker County understood that, hey, we can no longer proceed the way that we have previously done business.
And I have a question on the second issue. The state in their brief seems to, in part of it, indicate that perhaps the trial court didn't reach the second issue because of the finding that says that the court concludes that sufficient exigent circumstances to justify a warrantless blood sample being taken without defendant's express consent did not exist. Is it your position that that issue was ruled on or not ruled on?
I think they ruled on it, and basically I believe that Sotomayor says in her in the majority opinion, obviously, that while you've got this implied consent law that we've all been dealing with, effectively what she says is once that person withdraws that consent and says, I'm not going to take that blood or breath test, there's a procedural mechanical function that goes into place, whereas your license gets suspended. You know, or there's some procedural ALR hearing or whatever is going to take place after that. But I believe that they've dealt with that, and they said, that's fine, the implied consent law is okay, and obviously it's not unconstitutional, but once they revoke their consent, then there's another mechanism in place to deal with that revocation of their implied consent. And so, you know, they've dealt with it, and again, I mean, that merely just kind of takes it back into the argument of then you have to go to the totality of the circumstances and deal specifically with the exigent circumstances that are, you know, in whichever case that they're dealing with. And so, you know, they've essentially backdoored it back to the exigent.
So under the facts of this case, Mr. Davidson expressly declined.
Yes, he refused the breath and blood test. And so essentially once he refuses that, you know, that kicks off the mechanism for them to go deal with whatever procedural they're going to do in regards to his license. And again, I mean, having read the McNeely decision, I mean, it expressly deals with it's not unconstitutional to have a statute. It just, the statute doesn't take the place or doesn't form an exception to the Fourth Amendment. And it never has, it never will. So, you know, again, it says that you have to do it, but then it says you've got some procedures that you have to take in order to get that blood draw. And again, you know, just to reiterate some of the same positions a little bit differently, especially in regards to Mr. Davidson's case, the court made a good point in saying you're then unfairly burdening the defendant in regards to going out and having to prove that these procedures could have been done. And I just think that just based upon especially all the decisions that have come out of Amarillo and Texarkana and San Antonio in the past 4 months, I mean, that this part has been or is being litigated, and there's enough information out there for us to better get an idea of where the courts are going. And because of those factors, that we would ask that the court affirm the decision of the trial court. Is there any questions?
All right. Thank you, Mr. Scott. Mr. Llewellyn.
Thank you, Your Honor. A few things here with regard to Justice Walker's question on whether or not the trial court dealt with the second issue. I don't believe under the standard review that the court has to employ that really matters, because the evidence was undisputed. It was only by the state with regard to the arresting officer, and in my opinion, this all revolves around an application of the law of search and seizure to the facts, and that is reviewed de novo. So we're on a clean slate. So I just pointed that out to the court, that there isn't any specific fact findings other than that he did sign the DIC 24 and refused to give a specimen. But whether or not, I'm just saying that there's not like an explicit conclusion of law from the trial court that I'm trying to convince the court is incorrect. This is a de novo review with regard to that issue on the conclusion of law. And from that standpoint, I submitted that the implied consent law is basically a subspecies of the consent exception. And then I go through and distinguish why all the other cases that have come up recently, because this is a hot button issue, have flaws, and that I wish I could be more helpful for the court as far as explaining to the court or have authority for the court that, yes, implied consent is sufficient under the consent exception. There's just not any out there. I guess we'll have to wait and see what the Court of Criminal Appeals does with some of these cases. I also like to point out that McNeely is not an implied consent case. It's not even a consent exception to the warrant requirement case. It's merely a exigent circumstances. Missouri put all their eggs in the per se rule basket, and they got flushed. It's basically that we're not going to have a per se exception because of the unique circumstances posed by DWI case, because the human body is metabolizing the evidence and destroying it as they speak, and that that's not alone sufficient to give cops a carte blanche to just start drawing blood. That's all McNeely held. The Missouri implied consent law that that officer took that mandatory blood draw from in that case wasn't even before the Supreme Court. The constitutionality of an implied consent law, much less the Texas law, wasn't before the court. I think for some reason that appellate courts across the state have kind of been, I don't understand why they're relying on McNeely for any of those points. It is an exigent circumstances case, pure and simple in my opinion, but I'm also arguing that it could be used to support, well, they didn't have a problem with implied consent. The Supreme Court has never held an implied consent DWI law unconstitutional in its history. So maybe you could read it that way. Well, they didn't come right out if they, you know, cited umpteen states, observed that all 50 states have an implied consent law and made those observations, but didn't then say, well, you know, implied consent's really not the way to go.
But
they were citing it for a different proposition.
Isn't it a distinction without a difference? Because what's the difference between saying, well, in every case where someone's been previously convicted of two DWIs, we're going to imply their consent even if they expressly decline and sign the form expressly declining the blood draw, we're going to imply their consent. What is the difference between that and saying in every DWI, the fact of alcohol metabolism and the fact that they're in a car provides an exception to the warrant requirement? I mean, it's the same thing. It's an across-the-board application to a certain set of facts without any analysis of the totality of the circumstances or the individual circumstances. And so isn't it basically this? It's a distinction without a difference?
I would disagree to the extent that there is a distinction. The Supreme Court has already in South Dakota v. Neville say that a suspect, DWI suspect's right to refuse a breath test is just a matter of grace of the South Dakota legislature. If it's a matter of legislative grace, that legislative grace can be withheld. Our Court of Criminal Appeals for 25 years, and a few times, have just kind of briefly touched on the implied consent law. All those cases are in my brief. And what they have said is that for this limited piece or number, a category of people, that we can go ahead and imply consent, and you can then withhold their right to revoke that consent. And the Supreme Court has basically indirectly kind of blessed that, though that's all dicta in that case too. It was, can you put the evidence of the suspect's refusal of the breath test before a jury in violation of the Fifth Amendment? That was the South Dakota v. Neville decision. But with regard to you're saying that this is per se rule, this isn't across the board implied consent in every DWI case that we're talking about here today. It's only felony DWIs.
Yes, I recognize that. I premised my question on that.
Right. So basically, I agree that it depends on one's definition of what a per se rule is. Can you carve out a subcategory and then have a per se rule? Or just per se rules across the board?
Well, it's not a per se rule as applied to that category.
But that's what I meant. Or just per se rules as an esoteric matter, violative of the Fourth Amendment. I can see the argument cutting both ways on that. My point being is that this is not a per se rule. It is a per se rule that applies within a particular subcategory, yes. And the Court of Criminal Appeals, albeit in dicta and Beeman, has said that that is a constitutionally valid blood draw under our statute. It's consensual. It's an alternative means of getting to the same evidence. So I'm out of time, so I'll just say I'd appreciate if the court were to overrule the trial court and let us proceed to trial with our blood test. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Llewellyn. Mr. Scott, we appreciate all your arguments today and your briefing to the court. Your case is now submitted, and you are excused. This is our last case on the docket today, so the clerk will now adjourn us, please.
All right.